You are listening to the Baddest Studio W, The Buzz. Speaking of bad, coming up right after this, the Soul Savage Show. Guys, gals, you don't want to miss that. Q Lynn, EB, and Whitney. In the meantime, all right, let's get it. Folks, this is the Soul Savage Show. That's right, with Q Lynn, EB, and Whitney. Hey, gang, what's happening?
what's going on, Will?
You know what's going on over here.
Off right with my guy. The show is right when we start off with Erotic City. I told y'all that was my go-to song to play at church. That was.
I believe you was playing that like
in church. Kulan, Kulan.
You can play those. Whatever she was playing would be smooth, so nobody was going to question it.
Kulan.
I just play over them chords, man.
Kulan. How did that work? At what time were you? Was it during the offering?
It was during offering. Yeah, it was definitely during offering. Definitely was.
That's when she freestyled right there.
Oh my God!
Welcome to Soul Savage Radio, y'all. We're back.
Yes, we are.
Another show coming off a great show last week. Last week's show, I just want to say to the tell everybody, I have nothing. I have nothing to do with what took place last week. That was not me.
What do you mean? No. You are all in the mix.
And Will, okay? Wow. And, talk about legendary bosoms, because that was not me. I did not talk about Shaka's bosom or Aretha's bosom. That was all me.
Oh, now it's a bosom. Now it's a bosom. Okay.
Mm. I told you, Whitney, last week, I'm not fixing the calls. My elders, I ain't gonna call them titties. They're legendary titties, but I'm gonna call them legendary boogers. That's not what I mean. I wasn't even thinking about the area until EB brought it up.
Yeah, he did. That's right. Where's EB? He needs to defend himself.
That is true.
That's exactly right.
The last week's show is all EB's fault.
It is. That's right.
I have nothing. When I dropped that on SoulSavage.com, just. I'm gonna direct y'all straight to EB for prez on Facebook and on.
I want y'all to comment on that though. Y'all need to comment on that one.
Like, oh my God!
Need to hear the song.
Yeah. He already knows. That's why he ain't saying nothing.
Is he on the line? Is EB here? EB?
Yes, he's on. I don't know why he ain't.
Oh, he over here playing. Okay.
EB.
Really?
EB.
Really? Okay.
I don't know where he went.
Yeah, he just
I think he's having technical difficulties. But before we get to that, we got a special guest on the line. Fantastic. We've had him on last year, and it was just a good time. He's a phenomenal author, music critic. He's written for the Washington Post. So Washington Post, Entertainment Weekly, Vibe. Some more publications. He's also served as pop music critic for the Buffalo News and the Atlanta Journal Constitution. And he's interviewed Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey, Mary J. Blige, TLC, Chaka Khan. Listen, the list goes on and on, okay? The illustrious, the amazing, the talented, the just a profound of wisdom in these music journalism streets. I'll give it up right now. For Mr. Craig Seymour. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How y'all doing?
Back! We doing good because you all. That's all that matters is that you all.
Well, I'm that's doing that's good because I'm here. I'm back with y'all.
A good time, sir. How have you been? I know COVID, you know, still out here running the streets, you know, being raggedy, you know.
I mean, raw dog in air,
you know, at this point. How you doing?
It's true. It's like, but, you know, I mean, fortunately for a writer, it's just the kind of thing, like, sometimes, like, you know, I mean, writing is such a solitary thing where you're mostly just sitting alone in a room writing anyway, so it's kind of like, I can't really say it's a whole lot different. I can't be like, you know, oh, dang, I have to work from home. Well, I always work from home. You know what I mean? Like, dang, where are my coworkers? I don't have anybody to talk to. Well, I never have anybody to talk to. But it's that difference between, you know, when you choose to do something and when you have to do something, you know what I mean? It's like when it's a choice and I know I can go outside, then I'm like, you know, I'm fine being in. But if I know that I really can't be outside, then I'm constantly thinking of, dang, I wish I could do this. I wish I could visit this person. I wish I could go to this bar. I wish I could. So it's whatever. It's the same thing everybody's dealing with. I don't even know if, you know, I think maybe like, we're all going to have that. You know, sometimes if you go through a traumatic experience, you don't remember it, you know. I'm almost wondering if, like, a couple years from now, we all just is like zapped out of our minds and we don't even remember, except of course those of us who experienced some deep losses this year. But, you know, it's just one of those things. Hopefully it's just a blitty blip blip and things will just go on for normal after this, you know?
I'm hoping. I think the change of the administration, we'll get to the political segment, but I think just the change of the administration, I think, if anything, I think that's a positive of the year is just knowing. I mean, you know, who knows, the shenanigans are still going on, you know, with, you know, the Hot Cheeto Puff and his crew that's sinking right now, trying to,
well, to me, it's just, you know,
yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like an
X
that won't go away. That's all I was
going to say. Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, I understand we have, like, progressive politics, and we have a whole lot of, like, issues to deal with, but just knowing that the person at the top just gives a damn about black people, you know what I mean, at all, is a dramatic change. You know, we can get to the micro, we can get all down the line, you know, and we should hold him accountable for every little thing. We should try to get everything that we can get. But at the end of the day, it makes me sleep a little better just knowing that the, you know, president of the United States is somewhat of a damn about black people. You know what I mean? That part.
I mean, and he can read, you know, too. So that's good.
Yeah,
well,
and it's not a white supremacist. It's not like actively stoking the white supremacists. You know what I mean? Like actively stirring them up, you know.
Right. The only question, I only have like two more, because I asked you a whole bunch the last time you was on, but I was going to let, if Evie wants to go, I'll save my little two, because it's really kind of frivolous, but it's not at the same time, I'll get to it later. But Evie, if you want to ask them some questions, you go ahead.
Craig. Wait,
hey.
First of all, can y'all, am I here? Can y'all hear me now? Because they was playing me at the beginning of the show.
We thought you was trying to dip out on the hits we was giving them.
Hey,
last
I was
week.
Responding.
Talking
y'all
about
hear
legendary
me.
Bosoms, and I didn't want no parts of it. He brought it up.
Well, we was a titty show last week.
We were talking about
connection of Shaka Khan, and he started talking about her bosom for no reason. I don't know why, Craig. He just started talking about her bosom. I don't know why.
You know,
yep, you know what? He did. He was doing that. Yep, he was.
No, really.
You made Will come back.
Well, I know. What was the conversation? Was it 80s bosom? Was it 90s bosom?
No.
Was it
no.
70s bosom?
All bosoms
were
the same.
Legendary bosom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legendary.
Yeah,
I was giving appreciation to Rashawn Patterson's Love and Stereo 1999 album. It was a great, great album. And I was talking about how his vocal phrasing is he's such a student in Shaka Khan, and I got into a whole, you know, musical spiel trying to drop some gems for the people listening in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then Evie was like, yeah, she got Shaka got great titties as well. And I was like, where are we going with this? I didn't know where we were going.
Yeah, I know.
We got to
segue right to the
bosom.
I wasn't expecting.
We got to appreciate all of her.
That's right.
Taking the high road, and he was all down her shirt.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Like I said, they used to call them lungs. Lungs.
Oh my God, Will.
This is where we get sidetracked.
You don't help.
He calls them lungs, and then it just turned into a whole show just went off trail after he said Aretha and Chaka's titties was lungs.
Yeah, lungs. They are.
Come back from this.
It helps with the vocal cords.
See, wait a minute. Y'all taking it too far.
I'm saying clean it up. Okay, don't try to clean it up now, Will. It ain't going to help.
It is.
Evie, go ahead.
We have to breathe.
Go ahead.
No, it is crazy because, Craig, you and I have never spoken before off Twitter or off the internet. But, hi, I'm Evie. right.
We've never spoken before, like, on nothing?
Not off of Twitter. I know, it's very weird.
Okay.
Like, we've never really spoken, you know. But, hey, and I guess because we speak so much or we've been following each other for so long, that I know.
I still remember
pretty much
why
a lot
I followed you. Do you remember why? Do you remember what we were specifically discussing? Why?
Ooh.
I don't know. I guess you came up with my timeline or something. And it was a very specific artist, and it was a specific album. I remember the exact artist and the exact album.
Was it Mary?
Okay, that's a good one, yes.
was it Love and Life?
No.
Oh, it was the Mary album.
No.
No, wait. All right, I get one more. It had to be, like, Strong With Each Tear.
No.
Or, which one was it?
Now you get deep in the catalog now, come on.
I know, wait, was it the London Sessions? It could not have been.
No. And this was back during the day when you were posting the long, like, the Faith Evans Love Will Pass You By gifts and the,
yeah.
And the Gerald. This was during that period.
Oh man,
I believe it was an anniversary. It was the anniversary of that of this particular album. I can't tell you which anniversary of the album it was, and I guess every year is an anniversary to some extent.
For her,
it was
an
anniversary
album. Wait, it couldn't have been Share My World.
It was Share My World.
Was it really?
It was Share My World. Yeah.
Wow. See, I would have never remembered that. I would have never guessed that would have been the one, because I feel like that's
because
the one
you
that
were
I
talking
about the
you were being very. You were being very deep about it. You were getting into it, and a lot of people don't really get into Mary albums after certain things. And I guess you were doing a thread or something like that.
Oh, okay, okay.
You were, like, really, like, talking about the album. I was like, well, damn, who is this? And that's why, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that makes sense. Share My World, it was probably the 20th anniversary or something, and I was running off. But I'm asking you for clarification purposes here.
Okay.
And be very definitive. I want to know your top five voices in R&B, male or female.
You think you just come off the top of that?
Listen, I have to do it right now and here.
I mean, I'm going to put, like, this is not in order. This is off the top. And I'm just throwing people out that will be in the five-ish range, okay? But you would have to say Luther for me. You would have to say Shaka. You would have to say Mary. So that's three off the top right there. If we're talking about R&B, we're talking about like post Aretha R&B. Are we talking like where?
Ooh.
What time frame?
You know what?
I
will. You know, because I understand. I will narrow it down. Yes, post Aretha.
Okay, post Aretha. So then I would say Faith. Come on, I would have to put a Shaka could. But yeah, Shaka. You know, I would have to. This is gonna be one of those weird things. And I know we've talked about this artist before a lot, but, like, something about Misha Paris's voice just does it for me. Like, something about Misha Paris.
Yeah.
Even though she's not, you know, most people don't know about her and whatever, it's like there's something about the grain of her voice that just, you know, like, I think the best voices, the best almost hit you in that kind of, like, almost ancestral way. It's like, you know, you feel like this person knows something that you know, but you don't even know it in an intellectual way. It feels like it's connected to something from the past. You know what I mean?
Right.
And like, she just has that thing. Very similar. I would say, like, if you put my top 10, Karen Wheeler would also be, like, within that top 10 where she has that kind of voice and just kind of, like, takes me back. These people, you know, there's some people that sound... And this is not a distinction in terms of good or bad, but I think there, sometimes I make distinctions, like there's certain people who have careers because of microphones, right? And then there are certain people that would have had careers had there never, had before microphones were invented. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Shaka would have been singing no matter what.
No matter what.
Patti LaBelle would have sang, you know, Sade would not have a career, you know, but that's not about, it's about how people use them. Some people are like, some people have raised, there is something about being able to use technology into making it an art, you know, so like a Janet or something has used the studio technology and made it into an art form. A lot of people, like, even though Shaka, you know, has that kind of voice, if you think about Shaka's artistry, a lot of that has to do with how she layered her vocals and used in the studio thing. So I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying it's a good or bad. It's just a distinction that I sometimes think of. And I also just think of a distinction of, like, people whose voices, like, you really can imagine are kind of like eternal voices, like through all the eras, especially since we've been, you know, in this country, you could just imagine the voice pretty much sounded the same. The words might have been different and everything like that, but Misha Paris has one of them old school voices to me. Like, she could have been singing the blues, she could have been singing jazz, she could have been singing the spiritual. She has one of those old voices, as opposed to people that have voices that are kind of so you know, inflect are so sort of formed by just modernity, like a Dionne Warwick or somebody like that, you know, where just their whole speech patterns and stuff are, and just the whole way they approach singing is kind of formed by a certain kind of time. I don't even know how we got on this subject, but that's, you understand what I'm trying to say.
I don't understand exactly what you're trying to say. I think we are attracted to the same thing vocally. We are attracted to a lot of the same voices, and I guess that's why we get along, is we can feel each other on that level, multiple levels, but it's especially that level, because I'm a person that listens to vocals, and I get that you are too, which is why I was like, no, let me see if he can just give me his top five, because day to day, you're one of those people that will go back and you will study and listen to artists that I'll see no one else listening to. And I'll see you listening to something, and I was like, wow, nobody ever talks about her anymore. Nobody ever talks about him.
Like who?
I think one day.
You on the spot.
No, one day you were. I will tell you this one. One day you were listening to Lolita Holloway, and in my mind, I'm like, people don't talk about her. People don't pay her the respect, you know, that I feel, you know, that she deserves. And I was like, okay. He's listening to this, and then one day I saw you listening to Jeannie Reynolds, and
Jeannie Reynolds, oh my god, that
threw me all the way off, because I seriously thought that outside of myself, maybe there was like a small percentage of people who even knew who that was. It was like, because I've tried to, you know, reference that song before to people, and they just didn't get it. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't here with us for long. But, like, I'll see you listening to stuff like that. And I don't think I ever honed in on a particular type of voice that you liked.
I do think I'm attracted to those voices that I think could have been there through all those eras, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Dionne Warwick. So I don't know why I threw her out there.
I got what you were saying. Yeah, you weren't listening.
No, but, you know, but it's just like, I feel like, you know, like if you could do a segue of somebody singing like a wordless, spiritual, you know, whatever, you know, back in the, you know, enslavement days, or and then somebody singing like a civil rights anthem. So I like those voices where you can like hear like you can hear Faith singing, you know, during the Jim Crow era. You know what I'm saying? Like, she would need to change anything about the way she sings to be singing, you know, some kind of song that you associate with the earlier era. And I think it's something about those timeless African American voices. But in the case of Mies Farris and Karen Wheeler, not African American, but just those, sometimes those timeless voices that just sort of give me sort of a flash of all the eras of history in that one moment, which is interesting because I tend to like music, the undercutting of the sound. I tend to like things that are very kind of contemporary. You know what I mean? Like I tend to listen to something like with a hip hop beat or just whatever like that. So it's something about the voice that I like being timeless, but I do like the music to be sort of state of the art.
In the past, I guess, 5 to 10 years, are there any artists who have debuted with voices like the ones that you're describing, the ones that are sort of ancestral? Are there any new artists that have grabbed your attention?
The newer artists that I listen to now are people that you don't like.
Oh.
I think the newer artists, the people that you have dissed repeatedly on your timeline.
Wait, which one?
I feel like it's a lot. Go ahead.
Oh, we're not talking about this one. We're not talking about. If we were just talking about one, I might have gotten mad. We're talking about all.
Call them out.
I'm just saying, like, these are people that I don't necessarily see as. They don't have voices like that, but I guess I just find them interesting as sort of examples of a new generation, and just kind of hearing the way a new generation expresses their feelings of love and everything like that. Just like the way, like, and I'm no way comparing any of these artists to this artist. So let me just be clear about that. I want the hate. Please, I don't need the smoke. Not near Christmas. But, you know, but just the way, like, when Mary did My Life, that was a very specific way of that generation, you know, mm-hmm. which I feel I'm a part of, express love and longing and hurt and everything like right. that. So I think, so even though that was my generation, I can relate to it, I also can relate to other generations kind of attempting to do the same thing, even though that's not necessarily my experience. I can look at it like, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting that they think of love like this. That's interesting that they think of hookups like that. So in that way, with all that, you know, intro, you know, I really do like artists like SZA or Summer Walker, people like that, because I just like listening
you know,
to the way that they articulate their emotions. I'm sorry.
Have you heard Summer Walker's cover of an Amy Winehouse song? Now, I was like, all right, you're doing something a little bit. I mean, it wasn't like, I wouldn't say it was better than Amy's, but it was a great attempt. I was like, oh, she got a little bit, you know, she showed me something.
What song? Because usually when every time I see her name pop up on social media, I hide, so maybe I missed it.
No, it was, I think it was What Kind of Fuckery Is This?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Me and Mr. Jones, rather. Me and Mr. Jones, yeah. Excuse me, people. But yeah, no, I heard that. I heard that and I liked it, but.
When was that?
Well, I don't know when it was
recorded,
but
I
saw
it. I think it was
a
some kind of series on YouTube. It was something related to that because I saw it on there. Well, somebody had posted on Twitter and I guess they had just embedded it on there, took it from YouTube and embedded it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But that's where
when
I saw
it. Found out. Okay. I really like her. But, you know, she has a lot of different stuff. Like, I like her acoustic stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so those are artists that I think are interesting, not necessarily in the same, you know, there's an argument. Now, just hear me out a little bit, and I know I talk too damn much, but, like, you know, I just think of Mary, and you think of her as, like, you know, she came from the church, but also had that whole New York environment of hip hop, but also like just those kind of New York records that were just of the
right.
New York Quiet Storm and just that whole education of that. But at the same time, she was still in that time period where, and I feel like I'm in that generation where we still had like people down south, like, you know, where
right.
sometime you went and saw your people down south. So it's like you had that whole education too and the music of that and just that kind of merging. And I think, you know, that might be the last generation of singers that are like that, because we really don't have that kind of just the way that if you think about African American migration patterns and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
we really just don't have that, because you had a certain point, like in the 70s and stuff, where the migration patterns of going from the south to the north started reversing, you know, and so
right.
now we have people that have never been outside of Atlanta make records, you know, which is fine,
mm-hmm.
but it's a very specific type of thing, you know. So there's a certain way that I think, you think of Aretha, you think of like how many different black experiences she was a part of, just, you know, from where she was born, you know, like Buffalo, and then, you know, growing up, you know, Detroit, but just going the Chittenden circuit and all that kind of stuff. She was born in Buffalo, right? I just don't want to make a big
yeah,
mistake.
She was.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right, okay. Yeah. And, you know, just all the going, like, there's just a level of experience of kind of, so therefore, when she came out and sang, she represented black people she was the voice of black people from the nation, because she had, like, been around the whole nation and really saw and really had different aspects of the experience, where I feel like now it's more like you listen to somebody and you feel like they are really representative of a certain region or something like that, but that voice that's kind of steeped in different parts of the culture, I don't hear that, but I don't hear everything, so I don't know. It could just be what I'm listening to.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned SZA, because, well, not just that you mentioned SZA, but you also spoke to, like, for instance, Mary and My Life being the way that they dealt with the artists of the time dealing with any, you know, love and how they saw relationships. And I remember asking on Twitter a while back, like, what's one album that had a huge impact on your life? And I know a lot of people my age would be like, My Life, Mary, you know, My Life. But there were so many people that were saying SZA. And I'm just confused at why they would say this. But listening to what you said definitely, like, No, I was really confused. Like really? Like, I'm asking any album of all time, and this is the album you named? But listening to what you said, I'm like, okay, so I should go back and listen to the album, actually listen to it, actually, and, you know, see what that is, because I, you know, I don't know.
It's just the way she expresses herself and the kind of musing of it, and kind of it's sort of like, you know how, like, a lot of people that were really, like, 70s and 80s song crap people listened to My Life, and they were like, these aren't even songs. She's just, like, talking off the top of her head. But we didn't hear it like that. We clearly heard them as lyrics, but they were just hearing this, ooh, babe, you're not, it almost, they were hearing it almost like parody. You know what I mean? And
right.
I think that's the same thing with SZA. It's like, she's just kind of, it's almost like she's reading from her diary, or she's just like saying these thoughts off the top of her head, and she's racing from one thought to another, and she's talking about one guy, then she's talking about another guy, and then this and that. And it's kind of that sort of way of approaching relationships, I think, you know, and I'm not of this generation, so I can't speak to them, but that's the thing that sounds very different with her, and that's what makes it interesting to me, because it's kind of like looking into how other people see the world, you know, which is very different than my relationship to My Life. But I know that a lot of people's relationship to My Life is kind of like either looking back at how the hip-hop generation saw love and life and that kind of thing, or older generation seeing how, you know, seeing an album like My Life as being an example of how the hip-hop generation expressed its vulnerability at a time when a lot of people, you know, understand, like, My Life, people don't get, you know, some people don't make the connections, but, you know, My Life came out at a time when, you know, a lot of people, black, white, whatever, in power were calling us super predators and everything like that, were thinking, like, that there was not a shred of humanity, of, like, basic human emotion that even existed in people of the hip-hop generation. Like, some, like, the hip-hop generation were subhuman. And then she comes out with this album. It's like, no, we just don't express our emotions the same way. Here are our emotions. And also because she samples a 70s track, it's also like, and we still have love for you even though we don't communicate in the same way. You know, so that's what makes like an album like that so poignant.
Okay, and this will be my last question. Like, even hearing you explain that, I think that's one of the things that make you such a great writer, is because I don't want to say that you hear things differently, but you hear things and your process, like you process information differently than a lot of people do. And I just like to go on record as saying you are one of my favorite authors. I think I've told you that. I have All I Could Bear and the Luther book right here on my bookshelf. Like, you are one of those that I always support.
Thank you.
That
definitely means a lot. I'm sorry, go ahead. No, that's okay. I don't want to stop you. If you continue to praise me, I don't want to interrupt you.
I can't give you too much praise. That's the extent of the praise. But I guess the question would be, what is one piece of advice you give to someone or a young budding writer, whether they want to do music journalism, whether they want to focus on, you know, biographies, or whether they want to do like more memoirs. Like, what's a piece of advice you give a young writer, a young black writer? I got to specify.
That's great. Yeah, because that's important, because that makes a difference. Because and so the answer would just simply be, the first answer would just be clear about your intention. You know. I had to be very clear about my intention in writing the Luther Vandross biography, because I knew that I had to write a Luther Vandross biography that would stand up to my culture, not just a Luther Vandross biography that would have been acceptable to my white publisher. You know what I mean? Because what would have been acceptable to them and certain things, you know, wouldn't have played, you know. Or just would not be the way that I would want things to go down. You know what I mean? Like, I do everything just with respect for the culture. And I think one thing that I think, and this is a little bit of a side thing, but it relates to, like, the Jeannie Reynolds thing, is, you know, I think that a lot of people look at celebrities and like, look at them, what are they complaining about and all that kind of stuff. I actually think it's really hard to get, put yourself out there and to open up and sing and have, you know, to get your hair done and make the videos and you know, get stuff out there. And like 9 times out of 10, it's not going to work. You know, most people that enter these entertainment biz and have those big dreams do not make it. We are not talking about them. They are not in anybody's top five. It's in anybody's top 500. You know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, that's just the truth. But they do, but most of them do it for the love of music. And sometimes even the ones that really, really don't make it can touch us deeply for like the one thing they do. Like Jeannie Reynolds, you know, she touches mm-hmm. me deeply for like a handful of songs. Linda Jones. Linda Jones touches me like to my core. And so it's like, I have like a real respect for that. So I always want to respect those lives and what went into that. And just, you know, I think that that is as much of a part of like a struggle for, you know, I think with, as black people through our culture or also through our sports and through our politics and everything, but all I can speak of, I can speak of basically through music, is, you know, we're always trying to do like two things with it. It's like we're trying to prove our humanity just to a white supremacist society that will say that we don't have humanity, but at the same time, because we came up in that society, we're also trying to prove our humanity to ourselves a lot of times too, you know, and kind of reassuring ourselves of our own values and stuff. And you know, I think that's difficult. So, like, as a writer, I always want to give credit to that struggle. So I would say the main thing is kind of in a more esoteric thing is just to really have an intention. And so with Luther, I really wanted to represent, my intention was to represent him, but also represent that entire era that he came out of. Do you know what I mean? That era of you know, coming out of listening to Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, being obsessed with the Sweet Inspirations and coming out of that whole thing. I wanted to create that world. So that's the thing with that. As far as just, but in terms of the nuts and bolts, and because I know a lot of people are saying, what am I supposed to write down? You know, what am I supposed to do every day? What's the, you know, the main thing is about having, you have to have the discipline. But discipline doesn't always mean like waking up at 5 a.m. and working till, you know, 6 every day. But that's not for everybody. That's never been for me working like that. The discipline that I've had, the discipline that I think that I've seen work most for people that want to do big projects like books and stuff like that, you just have to have the discipline to forgive yourself no matter how long you've slacked off from the thing. You know what I mean? Because I think what stops a lot of people from doing those dreams and stuff like that is, like, you know, they have a burst of energy and they get down those pages and everything like that. But then, you know, oh, somebody wants to go out on Friday night. So, okay, I did that. Then I did something else on Saturday night. Then I thought I was going to get back to it, but I was tired on Sunday, so I slept in on Sunday. And then by Monday, you know, you're like, oh, I feel so bad that I didn't work on this. I don't know. And just all that tension and all that negativity stops you from getting back to it and like makes getting back to it like a bigger and bigger deal. Where as the more you can learn to just forgive yourself and just be like, you know, this is where I am with it right now, and I'm just going to try to just sit here and I'm going to try to express myself about this particular thing, and I'm going to try to express myself clearly about it in the same, like, never try to write, just try to, I never think of myself as a writer. I just think of myself as expressing something. Because I think if you think of yourself as a writer, then you're worried about the words and the thesaurus and pulling out all this kind of stuff and just being all writerly. I'm just trying to express a thought. So I'm thinking, okay, what do I want to express about my life? I want to express that it was an example of blah, 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 blah. Well, how would I say that to somebody? And then I just write it down. But at no point have I thought, ooh, I'm going to write something on my life. You know what I mean? Because I think people can get so caught up in that, like, writer, ooh, I need to, you know. And I think that that trips people up. So I don't know if that's helpful, but I think those are the two big things for me.
No, it's very helpful, and for the listeners listening, like, these are gems, like, from a pro in this. I'm telling you, his books are amazing. I definitely look forward to the next book and anything you have coming in the future. I think right now we're about to take a quick break if Will is ready.
Oh, no. We got to do promotions real quick, E.B. Hold on just a second.
Oh, okay.
We got, caught me on guard with that. I was trying to pull it up for a second. We got, promotion of Studio W Buzz, Celebrity Buzz, with Yamaji. She just interviewed Cheryl Cobb. I think Will's gonna have that on StudioBuzz.com on, in the archive. Speaking of, y'all mentioned Luther, she was the manager. She managed, Luther Vandross on his management team, I should say, and traveled with Luther. She's also done work with, Toni Braxton, Coach Toni Braxton, She's a bunch of celebrities, but y'all can check that out. I think we're going to have the archive of that show. And also, Yamaji just interviewed the Manhattans yesterday, the group, the Manhattans. Fantastic group. Mm. Y'all can check that out on archive. It's coming soon. And also, you can check out her interview with legendary musician Fred Wesley from the JBs, the legendary JBs. That's archived on the show. It's a great show. I actually tuned into it. It was really good. Fred Wesley was dropping gems per usual. And then also, I got some more, just a couple more promotions before we go to break. On December 27th, singer-songwriter Cookie Turner, she'll be singing at Sing Along Sundays in Oklahoma City, Oceans and Shark Bar. The address is 6101 North Santa Fe. It says no cover show, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. So, if you're in Oklahoma City area around that time, I think they're taking all COVID responses. So, I think it's limited, the seating. So, I would get on the tickets as you can because I think it's all limited. Should be a good time. Ocean Shark Bar, Sing Along Sundays with Cookie Turner. She's been on the show. I just wanted to promote that. And then we also got a promotion, Kev on Stage. Has a Keep Your Distance, socially distanced comedy show. This is volume 10. This is his last one of the year. It's a virtual comedy show. It starts Friday, tomorrow, December 11th at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 9 o'clock Central Standard Time, and 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It says if you go on Keep Your Distance comedy Instagram, if you go to the link, you get $3 off. If you use that link, they'll take you directly to the website so you get a discount. It's a live one-night-only comedy show featuring CT, Ty Davis, Sean Larkins, Naeem Lynn, Teddy Ray, Kevin Tate, and Doug Williams. Kev on Stage and Transit Pictures is bringing a live show. Like I said, I think the first tickets is $12. It's a 24-hour replay of the show. And then also, if you want to pay the $22 one, you get a 48-hour on the ticket. The tickets are available until showtime, which starts at 7. So you get your tickets now. You can't get the replay link once the show starts, so make sure y'all check that out. So Kevin on Stage, Keep Your Distance Comedy Show, Volume 10. And Will, if you're ready, we can go to break.
I am ready.
Happy belated to, or it's early birthday celebrations for, we play Prince's Erotic City because it's Sheila E.'s birthday's coming up, and also Morris Day's birthday's coming up. But I dropped this one, this Jody Watley joint, because I know Craig's a big fan of Jody Watley. So
right.
We gonna stay on this funk plane before we start talking about Mama's Gun. But yeah, y'all get it. Let's get on this funk plane real quick with Jody Watley.
We're gonna do that. And hey, Kulin, one more drop, okay? January the 1st, New Year's Day. Brand new show. You guys, I don't know if you know this guy or not. Dirk the Change Man Smith. Comedian. He did that song, Don't Let the Corona Get On Ya. He's a comedian. He's a pastor. Funny, funny guy. He has a brand new show that's coming on Studio W The Buzz. We'll check on that a little bit, but let's get to the song. Let's get it.
Let's get to it.
We'll be right back.
And we're back. Soul hey, 70s.
Damn.
Fishnet.
Got it. Listen, y'all know EB made a gospel version of Fishnet. It's called Fishnet.
Women.
Y'all need to check that out. It's everywhere you get. It's on all digital platforms.
I've got to know more about this. Women, hold it. You said our very own EB?
I don't know.
Yeah, made, y'all ain't heard that song? It's called Fishnet Com.
I ain't never heard about that in my life.
Women, hold it. No. You can't leave
the whole song.
You can't leave us there, Q. What about EB and this Fishnet song? I've got to know more.
Well, I recorded it in Mexico when Q was on one of her runs, so she let me ride with her. And I found me a little studio. And I laid the track real quick. It was supposed to be a Brandy demo, but Brandy turned it down.
Oh.
Listen, y'all, we got...
Oh. hey, Whitney, are you documenting this stuff? Okay, I have this stuff with me.
Listen, I've just found that it's better for me to pretend that I don't hear certain things, and then when I'm asked about it later, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I was taking a break. I just came back to the phone, so no comment.
You can be honest. It's the quarterly experience.
Okay.
You ain't got to.
No, Q-Land, neither you or EB has explained yourself. What about this fishnet? What inspired you to do this, EB?
Well, you see, see. I don't know what you're talking about.
I want to know if there's a video to go with the song that you recorded. Is there?
We didn't. Record the video.
Okay.
Let's report that. 6 minutes of rage, real quick.
Well, we're going to do that.
Or you want me to keep talking?
Okay. What? No.
Listen, I'll get you ready, man. Don't worry about it. I'm going to get you there.
I'm ready right now. Let's get it.
You ready right now?
Right now.
6 minutes of rage. Let's go.
Come on. Hey, you know, Dr. Will is always ready. Let's get it.
Have you ever seen a show
with fellas on the mic? No. Damn. How many weeks do we have to go through this? Fake news. Fake news. Fake news. Oh, my God. Georgia's on my mind. Georgia. Georgia's on my mind. Folks, we got to get out and vote. Do you know what's happening? Okay. All right. I'm serious about this. This is one serious moment. Well, all of this is kind of serious, but anyway. Folks, our lives, our livelihood, everything is on this race in Georgia, folks. Get your butts out there and vote. If you don't live there, call somebody. Everybody gather. If you're black, you got a relative in Georgia, I promise you. So call them. Tell them. Get out there and vote. Man, oh, man, oh, man. Because guess what? On the Democratic side, I'm going to have to say, they have two really, really great candidates. On the Republican side, not so much. Come on. You got that wound up Barbie doll looking fake, can't answer a damn question, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue. Folks, look. Crook, look, this thing, Trump came in and 45 came in and said, he's going to drain the swamp. Yeah. He's going to drain what was there and put his alligators and eels and worms and snakes and everything in there, fill it up. And this is what he has done. David Perdue. This guy is under a criminal investigation, guys. Insider trade. Oh, boy. Both of these cats, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, they're under investigation for insider trading. Now, a lot of us don't know what that means because a lot of us, we are not privileged to have stocks, folks, okay? As a professional, as someone who knows the industry, or happen to be a licensed stockbroker, I know about insider trading. So this is what happened. Trump called a whole bunch of his constituents, you know, the rich guys in, to his office earlier this year when the pandemic hit. They knew how bad it was. They knew exactly how bad it was. While they were telling the American public something else, like, hey, it's all gloom and doom. It's going to be over. Oh, guess what? Easter time. Put on your Easter bombers and go and tongue kiss somebody. All right? But anyway, but the real story is, hey, they knew how bad it was. So they traded stocks on that, and they made money. Guys, do your homework and listen right now. These clowns right now are... Guess what? Insider trading can put you in prison. As a broker, I can go to jail for up to 10 years, maybe a year, $1 million in fines, and lose my license for 10 years. And these guys are making money on inside information that the American public doesn't have. Look it up. I promise you. Both Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue. And speaking of that punk Perdue, hey, this cat had a debate. He didn't show up. Oskar had a debate, and guess what? He was talking to an empty podium because Perdue wouldn't even answer questions. He wouldn't even show up. As a matter of fact, CNN was on his ass this week, three times on his tour, and guess what? The reporter said, Mr. Perdue, can I get a question? Guess what this punk did? He got in the doggone bus and shut the door. But Bill Barr... Guess what? That bootlicker Bill Barr, you know, the AG, the head investigator in the United States, the head cop, okay, the top cop, he said, hey, man, you know what this shit I'm about. I'm leaving you guys. He said, nope, can't find any evidence of any voter fraud, so now Trump is turning on him. Guess what? This snake would turn on his mama. Oh, okay. But anyway, they don't give a damn. It reminds me of that song, Michael Jackson. They don't care about us, folks. Listen to that. I'm telling you what, it's more relevant now than it is at any other time. Intimidation, voter suppression, look out, folks. Let's get back to Georgia. That is the most important race of the year. Even more important than the presidential race, if you haven't understood that. Because, guess what? Because Gooseneck McConnell, I mean Deep Throat McConnell, guess what? He will swallow anything through, anything that Trump throws at him, boy, and he will not do anything. I can't see how in the world do this, oh my goodness, this robot, this clown, how in the world did he keep getting elected in one of the poorest states, if not the poorest state in the country, Kentucky? And he is bending you guys over, guess what, while he's getting bit over by the president. Okay, friends, okay, Republicans, Rudy Giuliani, guess what? This couldn't happen to one of my most favorite clowns. Rudy Giuliani got COVID. Okay, I'm sorry. No, I'm not, really. Because he just, look here. Yeah. Did you see the nut job and the show? This freak show, these freak shows that these guys are putting on around the country. Hey, did you guys just hear that our Saturday Night Live Barbie doll lookalike says, I know. Did you guys see what happened there? I was there. Okay, oh, my goodness. I can't understand what's going on here. Folks, this is the United States. We've got to be the clown show of the world. People over, even in Afghanistan, people in Africa, I don't care where you are, they on their bellies rolling. They say, how stupid are these damn fools in America? Oh, you guys been brainwashed. Okay, our relief. Folks, on a serious note, Mitch McConnell, you Republicans, you Democrats, whoever needs to get, say, a stimulus package or whatever it is, it's not your money. It is not your. And last time I checked, we pay taxes, okay? That means that the money that you are managing and holding belongs to us. Man, come on. What in the hell is going on here? Oh, hey, Rudy. Okay, 50-2. Okay, it's a blowout, bro. Because guess what? You've lost almost 50 cases around the country. Garen Owen, this Bonner and Bailey Act, I don't understand it. And you won two lower cases saying, well, yeah, there was a little fraud here going on, maybe resulting in about 100 ballots. Well, what about 7 million? You lost the damn election by over 7 million votes. And not only that, they rigged, I can't say it this time, though, okay, Electoral College. Rudy, my man, Biden got 306 and Trump. Look here, while you're in Mar-a-Lago, just suck this up, bro. You are a loser. Hey, that's my stint here on, my goodness, 6 minutes of Rage Q-Lin. I know I went over, but there's a lot to say, and whatever port you want, you guys want to jump in on, feel free. This is, so that's it. 6 minutes of rage. Back to you.
Yeah, I definitely thought you went. I thought that definitely was a 10 minutes of rage instead of 6 minutes. Because I was like, wait, hold on with the clock.
What?
Like, I know. I set my clock right. What's going on?
Well, you know what's going on.
Listen,
the hell.
I always have to make sure I'm not on whenever he's doing his rage. Because when he called that lady that's running for Senate. A Barbie wound up doll. So accurately funny, because that's exactly what I thought. She sounded like a robot.
She is a robot.
What she kept talking about was the what did she call him? The extreme liberal. It was some radical liberal. That's
radical, yeah.
That. I was like, This lady sounded like a robot.
Yeah.
your description is perfect.
Oh my goodness, it is awful. I can't understand, folks. Like I said, this is Twilight Zone 2020. This
yeah,
is the craziest shit that I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's hilarious. Listen, the only comment I have on this 6 minutes of rage was that your description of calling her a wound-up doll is hilarious. Craig, do you have a comment on his rage, what he was talking about before we move on?
Well, my whole thing is how you don't show up to a debate. I mean, that looks crazy.
Right.
You know, that'd be like if Randy ain't show up to the verses, you know, you can't just and they just went on with it. Like, I'm just like, it was, I'm not bringing up anybody, because it just came to mind. Gonna use this other example. But yeah, like, I just thought, like, how, I mean.
Right.
Okay, but, no, this is a good example. This is a good example. Like, if it had been the Brandy versus Monica, and not Ossoff versus, what's the name?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, that fool.
Brandy's fans.
His name is Purdue. David Purdue.
They would have needed to have been embarrassed that their girl didn't show up at the Versus. Like, and you would think that she would have received some embarrassment for not showing up at the Versus. But it's like, this man could not show up at the debate, and it doesn't really seem like it affects his constituency, and that's crazy to me. You
it
know?
Is.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, no, check this out.
To the thing, like, people be clowning Gucci fans forever if Gucci didn't show up to the, you know, if somebody didn't show up to a Versus, like, their stands couldn't show their faces on social media, you know what I mean? But, like, these sure. Republicans, their people don't show up, their people don't do the basics, and they still are loud and proud.
I don't understand that. You know? Well, look at Trump. I mean, look at everything he is guilty of that we already know. Okay, the Access Hollywood, not only that, look at cheating on his taxes, we already know about that. Over 20-some women have accused him of rape and or molestation. And guess what? His a whole bunch of shit, and his base is still there. I don't.
Yep.
Now, we've got... Now, we got
that's
a real...
called a cult. That ain't a fan base. That supports...
Right. You're
that
right.
A cult, sir.
You're exactly that right. It is
hey,
a cult.
Listen, I mean, honestly, all he doing is trying to prolong the process, and him going to Georgia trying to help those tenants, like, that shit ain't going to help, because if it ain't Trump on the ticket, they not going to really turn. I mean, the main base of the Republicans is the old white people, like the old
yeah.
white men and women that vote
yeah.
in that area. And then we learned from the midterms when Stacey Abrams was running that, you know, it turned, and as the election, we saw that it turned blue. So I think that's just the way it's going now, and it's about to, they're about to have a blue wave. I think them having, I think that, I'm just being honest, the fact that it's a black man running, yeah. I feel like he got it in the bag already. Like, I'm not even worried about that fact, because the person that was running last time, like, I mean, when Stacey Abrams was running, like, she was neck and neck, but they was doing, you know.
Man, they stole that from her.
She
got cheated.
The dude was being raggedy trying to count the votes or whatever. And it's like, how you going to be in a race and count the votes at the same time? Like, to me, that didn't make sense. But, yeah, it's the whole thing. I see it as, if we get, like Will said, y'all need, people in Georgia, y'all need to turn out and vote as well. Because this
right.
one. If we could get, what do you call him, gooseneck? If we get gooseneck
yeah.
out of there, man.
The goose got to go. Yeah, goose.
Get him
deep,
out of there, man.
Hey, deep throat.
I'm tired of him.
Deep throat. Yep.
He looked like E.T.
Yep.
at the pace.
Yep.
I want him to get
yep.
up out of there. He got, look like raw chicken breast. I'm tired of him. Get his old ass out of there. But yeah,
oh,
we going to get, speaking of Versus, we gonna switch topics. Thank you, Will, for that 6 minutes of rage. It was perfect. We get to this. I didn't add this to the notes, but I wanted to talk about it because they announced it, I think, a day after we did the show. Versus is happening this coming up. Is it on Saturday?
It is.
Keisha Cole and Ashanti. And I think, you think the fans gonna show up? I think it's gonna hit a milli because this is like, people were saying like, this is a Versus for like if you like wore Baby Fett fur coat in high school, like you going for Keisha Cole, and if you wore a jumpsuit with your belly out, like that's, I mean, you was going for Ashanti, and I feel like that's the most accurate description. I feel like it was both because my mom bought me a Baby Fett jacket when I was like 7 when I was in high school. So I feel like that was everybody's. They were trying to turn her into Mary so bad. I remember during the Keisha Cole phase, like, I think Keisha Cole was, like, mid-2000s, and Ashanti Rain was, like, early 2000s, but I feel like Ashanti was holding it down for, she was the main, you know, attraction for Murder, Inc., but I feel like they both, I feel like this is an accurate Versus. What do you think, Craig? I feel like it's accurate.
Well, first of all, let me just say, I'm not a big fan of Versus just anyway, so I'm not, you know,
oh, really?
I'm not that. Yeah, but, I mean, to me, I don't know. I mean, this is going to sound like a diss, but it's not a diss. But for some reason, I see more like a, in terms of the kind of records they made and sort of like the voices, I see more like a Keisha Cole, K. Michelle or something like that. I mean,
really?
Because Keisha Cole, well, I don't know, but Keisha
Cole. Well, it
got to
be from the same era is what I'm guessing. Like
true,
they both
true.
Had
that's
to
true.
Have the, yeah.
But like the records they made are so different. It's like Keisha Cole really had, you know, except for that one like big record with Missy, you know, and Kim and stuff. She really made a career just ballad after ballad after ballad. But they really were some singing ballads. You know, like Love is a really, is a singing ballad.
Off-key ballad, but go ahead, Craig.
Well, yeah, well, I love it. You know, but she was singing. You know, she was holding a note. You, there was some power behind the note.
Right.
You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Every hood girl wanting to sing that song.
Well, Ashanti, you know, was really kind of trying to be in that sort of like, or I just see her more in that kind of pop lane. She was never really trying to serve us vocals. You know what I mean? She was trying to serve us, you know, the hottest beats and whatever, like, she was doing over them with her little lyrics and vocals and stuff. But it's just, I mean, I guess, like, Keisha just has such more of a, more heart and energy to her. And that's not a diss, it's just a compare, where Ashanti's style was more cool and laid back. So it just seems very different. Like, I mean, I don't know how happy it's going to sound against Love or against Play Your Cards, right? I don't know. I won't be listening. But, you know, I'm sure other people will, and
I'll
wish them
that. I know, listen, Twitter's been having, like, a field day with them two since the conception of Black Twitter. It's been a good time.
Well, who was the one
so.
With the fish plates? The fish plates originated with who?
That was the
originated with Keisha
Cole, for sure. Okay. It was Keisha Cole. Yeah. And somebody on Twitter said, I was cracking up when somebody said this. They was like, is she gonna unblock us so we can enjoy it with her? I was fucking crying. That shit is hilarious. And she retweeted it. She was like, nah, they can go to Apple Music. That shit is funny. I think she blocked my old account. It was an old account I had. In 2008, she had me blocked, but she ain't got me blocked on this one that I have now. But the jokes was definitely going hard in 2009 and 2010 on Keisha Cole. Ashanti, she just started getting, it's some video of hers that's resurfacing with her scooching on the floor. That's what I call it. She was scooching while she was dancing. That one, people have been having a field day with that one on the internet. And so
I feel like the
comments is gonna be popping. I just
what
feel
about
like
her doing
they'll be everywhere.
The sweet thing, the video of her doing sweet things just always keeps reemerging and always. That's always a good time, you know.
Because
he really thought she was saying doing something, you know.
Hysterical. No, I get what you're saying though. I think it's just the matter of like who came out at the same time, like because I would like with Brandy and Monica, I wouldn't even put them like on the same level in terms of like how they made their music because it's completely
well, that's
different
a good point,
vibe.
Yeah,
but
really
it's about
point.
Like who came out at the same time. Like you got to match the era, and they both have hits. That's what it's about. I love I like the friendly competition of it all. Now the Jeezy versus Gucci Mane wasn't friendly at all. That was probably the most. I didn't even watch that one. I watched maybe 2 minutes of it, and Gucci Mane did the diss track he did on Jeezy, and it was like, sir, like, you just messed the whole vibe up. It's like, it was like weird. It was like very, like, oh man, something might go down after this, but it didn't happen on the live, thank God. But that was probably the most awkward versus thus far. But I think this one's more friendly. I just
don't get into the concept. I don't know. I just don't, you know, just hearing snippets of the songs. I don't know. There's something about it and watching it on IG. I don't know. There's just something about it for me that I've never got into, but maybe it's a generational thing. I don't know. You know, I always feel being left out, but.
No, I think the conception of, I watched the first one when I think it was, I don't necessarily call it a, like, the, people being schooled or learning of people's songs, I think that's the after effect for some of them, depending on how old they are. But I just like that. I think it's because it was COVID was happening. Everybody was in quarantine.
Yeah.
And so it was just a fun time. People, and then
people's music numbers are starting to do, like, way better. It's like, because I think when Jill Scott and Erykah Badu, like, they got over, like, 1.8 billion streams. Like, that's fucking insane to get that many streams just off of a Versus. But I think that's the great thing about it is that if you, even if you had that in your playlist, like, if you haven't revisited in, like, 5-10 years, because it was, like, some DMX, when DMX and Snoop Dogg, it was a couple of songs that I was like, man, I haven't heard that in a long time. And I went and streamed it, the album. So I think that's the effect of it. But yeah, it's proven that, you know, people go back to listening to their songs. So I think that's the, and then they make playlists and people put it on the internet. I think that's the, I think it's just something for us to do because some of us that's still in quarantine, like, you know, it's just, I look at it as that. I don't really look at it as, like, oh, man, this is some deep shit. Like, this is so, like, I don't look at it like that at all. I just, like, because I'm competitive. I'm just naturally competitive. So I like watching shit like this because it's like, yeah, throw that shit back. Like, yeah, play that one. Play this record. And, yeah, I just, that, I think it's just if you're, like, innately competitive, then this is your jam. If you're not, like, if you don't, you're not that serious about it. I mean, like, stuff like this, it ain't your thing. But I'm competitive, so that's why I like watching shit like this. But I honestly
but you know
don't
what
care
I
about the outcome. I just want to hear the music.
Right. But you know what? I have enjoyed a COVID experience, entertainment experience that, you know, is not like Versus, but it's very COVID-specific. I really have enjoyed those live concerts people have given, whether it's like Erykah when you pay for them or something like that. Because like the Clark Sisters did one that was just phenomenal.
Did you watch Chaka Khan? Did you stream that one?
Yeah, I like Chaka too. I watched that one. It was a little confusing. It was just like. Like, she did Through the Fire twice, and it was just, I don't know. I mean, but it was Chaka. It was whatever. I mean, I don't, you know, the weird thing about Chaka is she had just put out, I think the live album and the live DVD just came out this year, if not
for my birthday.
And that's so wonderful that it's just kind of like, you know, that's better than this. But, like, you know, I kind of enjoyed these little experiences where you sit around and it's a whole concert and stuff.
Fantasia's
I enjoy
too.
That.
And Lettucey.
I missed her.
Lettucey dropped one some weeks ago. I watched it. It was dope. Lettucey's is off the chain. You get into that. And I think PJ Morton, I think he's either working on one or it's already out. But I think it's the gospel one. I don't think I want to get into that one, but the rest of
it. Did y'all watch the OWN gospel special? Did y'all watch the OWN Gospel Christmas?
I think I got it recorded on my DVR. I gotta
PJ
watch it.
And Layla Hathaway do a good little number.
Yeah. Listen, it's a good time. But yeah, we get to we only got two more before we get. We'll do Mama's Gun after we come back from break. But the topic I want to talk about Teyana Taylor for a little bit. The Grammy. Well, mostly I think we already talked about this a couple weeks ago, but. I don't think we talked about her retiring. I don't know if she said that. Did she say that officially? Because I saw the video, but was she serious or was she just like, I was just going into the, because I saw her statement and it basically being upset about the Grammys or not getting nominated, her album she just dropped earlier this year. And I think it kind of was like the same thing Yara Lennox was talking about last year when she was wanting to get nominated for or wanting to win the Soul Train Award for Shape But a Baby, her first album. And I'm like, my whole take on it was, I think, Donna, I feel like her identity isn't, like, really set with this album. I feel like she just she's, like, nostalgia about the 90s, and that's pretty much all the R&B that I've heard from her is her, like, taking either samples or she's featured on somebody's record that already has a 90s sample to it, like Diddy Sun, like, all of them, like, they keep sampling 90s music, and it's like, I can't really, I mean, it's cool, but it's like, I want to, like, hear creatively what you come up with, and I think I said on Twitter, I feel like she has the potential to be better than what she's making, but I feel like they want the accolades, and I feel like that's not going to come with it. I'm like, if you're not really putting out authentic music that speaks to you and not just a nostalgia feel, but what you think about it?
Who, me?
Yeah. Or whoever wants to go, it don't matter.
Well, I was just going to say, first of all, 23 tracks. Like, I was like, because when you said something about her, I was like, and I know I listened to the album at the time when it came out, but then I went back and I was like, it's 23 tracks. No wonder I didn't play it repeatedly because it's 20, and don't nobody have that kind of time, you know, but I feel
they were all
like,
sleepers, just to let you know. They didn't pull me in.
But I really like, but there are some, like, I like, because JT from City Girl, I'm a big City Girls fan, JT wrote to her and was like, oh, but I need more Bear With Me. So I was like, well, let me play this Bear With Me. And I really like
how you like that.
So, like, 13 through 15, or maybe, like, that mid area, I was enjoying a lot.
12,
so,
yeah, 12 would have been good for that album. Yeah, she should
have. A lot of people just go through that, you know. Yeah, but did you read what Janet just wrote to her? Janet just dropped a message to Tiana on Instagram.
Yeah, that's she, whatchamacallit, like, she's getting, like, the respect from the veterans. Like, she got, like, to me, like, if you get a co-sign from Elton John, like, ain't nobody tell me shit, okay? That's how I thought about it. I'm like, shit, you got, when she wrote that on Twitter, I was like, yo, you got a co-sign from Elton John, because Elton John just don't be big enough nobody. I'm like, you got respect for him, and you mentioned Janet Jackson, and that's my thing. I think if you get the R&B veterans or just a music veteran that can, like, pull her out of that phase, because that's all it is just a little phase or whatever. Because even Michael Jackson got upset that Off the Wall didn't win as many awards, mm-hmm. and then he came back with the Thriller album, and that shit went crazy. Like, you just got to come back with some heat. I feel like the disappointment, she should turn that into get the music veterans to get in her ear and give her that encouragement and give her the pep talk she needs, and then come back with another great album that's going to be better than your first album. I feel like
come back with 50 songs.
Right.
She's going to come back with a box set.
She's going to come back with 40 songs, you said. That's hilarious. Yeah, I think, well, listen, can't no 30 songs bump like that.
Y'all didn't appreciate this 20, I'm going to give you 40. If y'all don't like that, I'm going to give you 40. I'm going to exponentially, until y'all give me
like, don't encourage us more songs. We don't need to turn it to a mixtape. That should be a mixtape, 22 songs. I ain't listened to an LP that was that long since Snoop, like 2003. That's the last time.
And those were
or 2004. That's the last
and some
time
of those were
about
probably
20 songs. Yeah. I can't listen. I kind of skimmed through that album because none of the songs was really pulling me like that, because I was trying to do my 2020 wrap up, and I was like, this album, because people was really bigging up this album, and I was like, let me listen to this album, because anytime people be bigging it up on Twitter, I be giving it a side eye, and it's like, hold up. Your taste is kind of questionable. Let me double check, and then it's okay. It's not you know, top tier R&B, but it'll do. Like, for these young ones, I could see, like, somebody under 30 that would rock with that Tiana Taylor album. But it ain't, like I said, I ain't got 22 songs. It's like 22 song listen in me. Like, I'm not listening to. That's why I love Prince, because he would give us 7 tracks and was like, good, look, take that, we good. I can listen to a whole Prince album. It was just 7, 8 songs. Like, give me that. Don't give me the whole 34 track. Well, Chris Brown's supposed to be dropping one that's that long as well. It's like, sir, we didn't want the last one you gave. Like, I'm not going to listen to a documentary music album. Like, we're not. But, yeah. The Grammys, what you think of how they're looking at R&B, that category? Do you think it's on the peers or the ones that vote for these artists, and do you think it's just, like, y'all just ain't making quality albums? Whoever wants to answer it, it don't matter.
Oh, I'll say this. This has always happened. I mean, it's a couple different things happening. It's one, like you said earlier, a lot of these artists, they don't have an identity as an artist. Tiana is the perfect example. All I know about Tiana is she's from Harlem, she's beautiful, she can dance, and she likes the 90s. But I don't know anything else about her. She's not shown us who she is as an artist. For her to be upset, I don't want to take that away from her, because I understand how important the Grammys are to some artists. So, yes, you can be upset, but think about people like Diana Ross, who has never won a Grammy, who deserves all of the Grammys. You know, think about, I see, it, like, this year they just finally, well, not finally, but they nominated Nas again, and I'm hoping that he'll actually win one. Like, he's never won one. My favorite, like, Mary wasn't even nominated for what she should have been nominated for. Like, her first Grammy was actually some BS, but whatever. But these artists, they put so much into it now, and I think we just see it on social media. These people have been upset. You know, I'm sure going back to the early 2000s, to the 90s, to the 80s, to the 70s, like, there are many artists who've been upset, but they didn't have that same amount of visibility as artists do now, where social media, like, you say whatever you want, it just go viral in a second. So I think that's what's happening with Tiana. With R&B in general, I'm a person who, I have not watched the Grammys since 2006. It's just not for me, and that's just not something that I care to, you know, whatever. But I don't want to diminish the worth of a Grammy to artists who actually do work hard on their albums. I just don't get the, while I understand it, I still don't get the whole, you know, I'm making quality music, why isn't anyone loving it? Well, that could be true, but also, if no one is loving it, maybe it's not the right quality. Maybe it's not, you know, as good as you thought it was, and that's okay too. But to say that you don't want to make music, or you're mad at the committee, or you're mad at whoever, I think that's foolish.
I mean,
because we touched on this last week, and I think I've more so kind of thought about it, like, how the perspectives that are coming out right now. I think I was kind of on that track. But the more I kind of look at it now, I really feel like they're just, like, kind of having a moment, like I would have a moment if there was some award. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's a part of us that knows, like, the award at the end of the day or whatever, it's not going to make or break your career. Like, I didn't realize Diana Ross didn't have a Grammy. I think I just lumped her into a category of people who I just assumed had a Grammy. But I think that's part of, like, what some of these artists get upset about is there are a lot of artists that we would think would have Grammys, and they don't, even though they are, to us, they're legends and icons. And I think what we're seeing with some of the artists right now is that they, you know, maybe they view themselves as one of those artists, like one of those future legends, a future icon. And, you know, y'all mentioning visibility, the artists see how many fans they have. They can look at their social media and see how popular they are. So if they're feeling like, okay, I really put out, you know, 102 songs on this album, and y'all not checking for any of them, like, I gave y'all all that content, I came through, I laid down all the tracks, I got vocals that's better than some of the other artists out here, and y'all don't, like, you don't hear me, you're not going to acknowledge that. I think, like, that may be where she's coming from, like, she's just frustrated. Not saying I agree or disagree with it, because I think I may have heard a few of the songs off of the album, if I'm being honest, but I couldn't tell you which ones they were. But I think we're just seeing, like, their frustrations at play. Not to mention, like, I think everybody this year right now is frustrated, too. Like, it's just, you know, this is a crapshoot of a year. Yeah. So this may not have bothered her, perhaps, you know, a few years prior or even a few years later. Like, nobody may care, but just with everything that's going on, sometimes it feels like when you don't get something you were really going after, like right now, those losses, I think they're hitting us a little bit harder than they would typically.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only thing that she did have a legitimate point is that on those big categories like R&B Album of the Year, Album of the Year, and stuff like that, they do, it's not just straight votes. They do have people that go in and just make sure that there's the right representation and that it, you know, holds up musically. And I do think that it's pretty whack in 2020 for there to be the R&B album and it's all guys. Like, I think somebody should have, it might not have been Tiana, it could have been a Janae, you know, it could have been a somebody, mm-hmm. but I do think that that was whack. I do think she had a legitimate thing to say about that. Given that, you know, I know that they have people that look in that, specific committee to look into those and make sure that there's representation in those top categories. It just does seem kind of whack to me that they didn't, that they just had all men saying that the best R&B this year was just by God. I don't know. That seems kind of whack to me, but.
I mean, the ones that I'm, like, listening to now, like, the majority of ones I listen to were men. I can't think of, I mean, the ones, like, what's her name? Low something?
No, Allegra?
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
you just did to that girl
what Mary did to Tina Marie when she died, and she kept calling her everything but Tina Marie on Twitter. It's the funniest thing for me.
Oh, please stop.
That's her name is. I don't know who I said.
All right, it wasn't that much female R&B I heard this year, it was mostly like, I didn't hear a lot of it, I'm saying that stood out as the album.
And then also, they probably didn't campaign for it. Like, I'm sure, like, Lettucey's album is probably going to get nominated next year because she campaigned for her albums to get nominated for Grammys. So it's like, it's that part as well. Like, it is your peers voting for it, so it ain't like, you know, it's like, you know, okay, how it used to be. It's like, your musical peers could actually vote for you to get nominated, but apparently they was like, yo, this album trash. Not trash, but it was probably mediocre to them. It's like, whoever the pacemakers is that's in the room voting for it, I'm like, they probably wasn't rocking with it. Like I said, you can campaign for your records to get nominated. Like I said, PJ Moore campaigned, Layla Hathaway, Lettucey, if those artists, if they could get nominated and get, like, y'all gotta step y'all shit up. Cause Gregory Porter album is solid, so she can't, I mean, I get it's a lot of male R&B singers in there, but them albums are straight, especially John Legend, like, it definitely deserves to be in there, so.
Well, that's what Jimmy Jam always says. Jimmy Jam.
They're great.
Jimmy Jam always says be full, because, you know, because I don't know if he still is as involved as the Recording Academy as he once was, but he always just says, people when they're like, why I'm not, he's like, well, who would you take out? Well, tell me who,
right,
of the
exactly.
people that are nominated,
he is, I believe.
Who do you feel you would have taken out? And if you can't answer that, then get out my face. I mean, Jimmy's nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, but, you know, but that's his whole point. Like, unless you really can make an argument for taking somebody out, then maybe just sit down, you know?
And I don't think her album met the deadline anyway. Like I said, they drop these albums and then they wait till the last minute to start campaigning to get nominated. And it's like, you can't do that. Like, y'all should have, if you was that worried about being nominated for a Grammy, you should have dropped that shit at the top of the year so you could already be meeting the deadline. Like, you can't wait. I think she dropped that shit, like, what was it, late spring or summertime, something like that. Like, it wasn't even in the ballpark of being nominated, being at the way it would be nominated. I don't even think it met the deadline, so I don't even know what she was tripping on, but that's just me. But we're going to go to break real quick, and we're going to wrap the show up these last 25 minutes. We're going to wrap the show up talking about Mamba's Gun, and we're going to have a little house and gospel music conversation as well. So we'll be ready. We go to break and drop these. Mamba's Gun was dropped in November. It turned 20 last week, and so we're just playing songs from Mama's Gun album, the last hour of the show. So, Will, if you're ready, we go to break, and we'll be back.
No, but I'm clever.
And that's Soul Savages. Back to back. Erica Badu. All right, back to you, Q.
Man, listen. Back Soul Savage Radio, we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of Mama's Gun. Man, I said on Twitter, I was like, I think Erica's part of the last musical generation that had a sophomore album that, like, sort of just went, like, past her first album, to me. She's just part of that last generation that could follow up their debut album. Like, I can't think of anybody else after Erica. I mean, it's probably more, but I think during that time period, that album was just really big. And, yeah, we played Clever. I was trying to, I had to fit the, those aren't my favorite, Clever's not my favorite song from Mama's Gun, but I was trying to fit songs that fit the show. Because I was going to play Green Eyes, but it's like, that's too long for the show. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to have to break that apart to just play it on there. But, yeah, it kind of makes me sad now because it makes me think Rory Hargrove, and I just, it's like, puts me in my different fields now when I listen to Green Eyes. But, yeah, that is just a masterpiece of an album. It's just, man, I have all of Erica's albums. Like, I've had it on CDs. And I have it, all hers on vinyl. I think the only one I don't have is New America, Part 1. I gotta look and see if I got that one, but I think I have all of them. But yeah, I definitely got this one. This one, you could just sit and just play the whole album. Like, it's kind of hard to pick a top 3 or top 5, whatever, make a top list for that album, because the whole album is, like, fantastic. It's like, you got the singles, Didn't You Know, you know, is Clever, then, what was the third one? What was it? Bag Lady? Like, those are great.
Yeah.
Times Are Wasting.
All great singles.
Times Are Wasting.
I think it's the album cut. I think she only had 3 for that album, if I'm not mistaken. It's just Time, Didn't You Know, yeah, and Bag Lady and Clever. I think that's the only 3 that was from the album. But either way, I don't know if In Love With You was a single or not. I don't remember. Was that a single,
was.
Craig? It was?
I know video wise, the only videos we got were Bag Lady and Didn't You Know, right?
Yeah, right. But either way, the whole album was perfect.
Well, I didn't realize until today when I was kind of looking up stuff, you know, Questlove did a whole, I don't know if y'all saw, he did a whole Instagram tribute to it. And I didn't realize, like, she wanted the album to play like a DJ set. And she wanted it, like, to, where the songs subtly segue into one of another and stuff like that. And, you know, of course it feels like that, but I never realized that was her intention going in. And it really does go through this whole musical journey, you know.
Wow. And you know what she was studying? Chaka's Naughty album, because her Naughty album does that too.
Right. To a frustrating degree, because sometimes I just want to hear Nothing's Going to Take You Away without it going right into Naughty.
Listen, I can't listen to that album without segueing, hearing that dump, 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 dump. I can't hear it until I get to that point. So that's me, though. She made that album for me, for music nerds. Music nerds like me that want to hear the segue.
Q. Q.
What, yeah.
Okay, nobody better not laugh. I fell in love with Erica when she produced Tyrone. I'm serious.
Yeah. A lot of people did.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Yeah, but this album, the sophomore album, to me.
But she's so, she's so much clever than that. I mean, you know, not only that, but brilliant, brilliant, brilliant artistry.
Yeah, and with
that song was just so direct, and it was between the two albums, and it was, I mean, when Tyrone came, because I remember I was living in D.C., and she had performed it at a Christmas show, one of the first times she performed it at a Christmas show, and then they were just playing that recording that she had done at the Christmas radio show way before it ever became a single or anything, and it's just, you know, because, like, On and On was so kind of esoteric, and she had this kind of image of being kind of a little bit weird, and with the onks and the stuff, and all that kind of stuff, but then when she dropped Tyrone, and it's just really just a woman talking about her no good man, which, you know, goes way back in terms of black music tradition, that just so hooked on so many people. And I think that's why so many people were really ready to embrace Mama's Gun, because they just, so many people related to just the directness of Tyrone.
Absolutely.
And the sophomore album, just to get back to that, the sophomore album, I remember seeing some critics were saying they were like comparing it to D'Angelo's Boo Boo album, but I'm like, don't even meet, like, to me, she was way more, she started to get more, like, D'Angelo was like in, like, had one foot in to the progressive side. This is like before he started getting into the funk, like, heavy. Like, it was still like, you still had like the Cool in the Game, inspiration Voodoo had that esque on it. But Erica was like introducing different sounds that wasn't incorporated in whatever this neo soul thing they call it now, whatever, during that time period. She was like, she had flute, she had, percussion, like Voodoo didn't even have that, so I didn't understand like why that was the. I think just because they had shared the same, because they created that album at what was it, the
Electric Lady Studios.
Yeah,
all the same people. Yeah,
they felt like Questlove and Jay Dilla, the whole crew, James Poyser, Pino, all them like would create Voodoo, and then they would go down and create that record and do records with Talib and then do records with Mos Def and, you know, the Soul Aquarians, like, that was noted, but they were she's pulling from a whole different source from what D'Angelo was pulling from. The D'Angelo's process was just playing, like, classic records, like, he would go through a whole vinyls of records and they would just jam off those records and then they would create something from that. Erica's whole approach was completely different. Like, she, and shout out to James Poyser, like, he don't get enough credit for that whole time period, like, in terms of that sound. Because even with him being a pianist, like, he still was, like, producing the records, but he, like, with Kiss Me on My Neck and Jay Dilla doing that, like, the way they did that was, like, you would never take somebody that just played piano fully doing that, and he was like an all-around producer and had the ear to like really mesh in. And then shout out to Russell Elevato, like the way he engineered that record to where he highlighted her vocals in the background, like they had so many, like Dana did background vocals out of Dallas, it's a couple more, just some great singers that were there, and they did about maybe five of the 13 tracks? 5 out of the 13 tracks they did background vocals on, and Erica did the majority of them. But the way they highlighted her vocals throughout the album is, like, dope. And she had, and then it's, like, some bonus songs on there. I think she did, what was it, the one with D'Angelo, it was, like, Precious Love. I remember that one. But I thought that was from his album, but I think it was, she had a bonus album.
I think that was on the High School High soundtrack. Your Precious Love, yeah,
but to me, I feel like Mama's Gun was the start of where you saw the evolution, like the sound wise of like the different inspirations, because she went like straight funk, but then she made it jazz, and then people try to call it all these different sounds, like it's like, oh, it's acid jazz, and it's like, fuck, it's just music. It's like, I hate all these terms that people try to define it. Like, she had a plethora of genres that she was like influenced by, but I think what remained steady was like she's the lyrical part of her creative process was like what brought me into the album. But what y'all love about the Mama's Gun album?
Everything. It is the perfect album, right? I think, out of all the artists that I love, because they're, you know, modern day. Erica is the only one who, in my opinion, has like a perfect discography. Like, there's not one thing out of place. And with that Mama's Gun album, my favorite thing is her working with like these big legends. Like, you got Roy Ayers, you know, on Clever, and then you got Roy Hargrove. You got Betty Wright singing background vocals and writing. Yes.
Yeah, so, 80, 2000,
and she sang background on Kiss Me on My Neck. So it's like, for you. That's the thing I love from artists, especially like current artists. I love to see your inspiration, but I also love like you actually including you know, these legends in your work. And I think it was just so perfectly pulled together. Everybody knows I love a good background singer. So you got China Black, you got Yazara, you got Ndambi singing background. Like, it's no way you can go wrong. And that album is one of the few albums that I can put it on anytime, like no matter what emotion is going on with me, you know, and I just want, you know, that music therapy. Mama's Gun is one that you put on and you press play. I will say favorite songs are probably End On and Green Eyes, but perfect. Like the moment I heard Penitentiary Philosophy, the first time, like when I pressed play that day, blew my mind, and I've been a fan ever since.
I think she just makes, like, she makes music that you want to keep listening to. Like, and this album is a perfect example of that. Because I think everybody probably has, like, maybe their favorites on here. But it's one of those, like, albums that everybody, like, can listen to and rock out to. Like, because these are still, like, I didn't realize this album was this old. And I was sitting here thinking, like, in 2000, I think I was probably like in eighth grade when this came out. So
that album, man,
is weird looking
the AT2000 is in my top. I said I didn't have one, but it's hard for me to pick. But that one, the way Betty, like, that's how you know, like, that's why I be talking about, like, singers that play music know, like, what notes, like, they know how to follow the music. And it's like her, like Aretha, like people that play the actual music in Prince. Like they, like Betty, like when you hear her background vocal, she's hitting the bass note of what James is playing on his bass note on the piano. And it's like the way she's, like, she's matching the rhythm section. Like she's matching it perfectly. It's not even out of tune. It's like perfectly matching what the rhythm section is doing. And it's like most singers wouldn't know how to stay in pocket like that. And you wouldn't even notice that was her, but the way she's hitting those notes, I was like, who thinks like that? It's like you have to be in tune with the music. And as, listen, late, great Betty Wright is just like, hearing legendary singers like that, it's always paving the way. Like she was one of those artists that always gave back to the new artists that were coming up, like her, Angie Stone, even though Angie Stone, like she's been around forever, but I'm just saying, in the early 2000s, Angie Stone, like, clearly that was her influence, and Chaka Khan and Gladys Knight, but, you know, Betty Wright was always showing love to the new up-and-coming artists, and I think at the time, that, and Erica, just for her to be pulling out all these great legendary singers and musicians, man, like, nobody knows who's, half of these people are unless you would look them up and understand that they all have history in a jazz sense. Especially all the jazz musicians like Roy Ayers, like, come on, man. Like, he's dropping, like, those classic vibraphone vibes, and at the end of Clever, like, it's like, to me, that's what I appreciate most about it, is just paying it forward in terms of the legendary musicians, and, you know, like I said, Mr. Doc on percussion. Like, I remember, like, I know him from Al Jarreau Records, his 1978 album, and I believe the 79 album he did percussion on, and who else is on there? I think he had, we can't forget about Roy Hargrove, rest on to him, legendary trumpeter. Who else on there? Pino, legendary bass player Pino. Pino's playing like three, four records on there. Fantastic. Of course, Questlove is on there. And then got Gino on there. He's a Dallas native. He's done, most of his work was with Erica, but, he's like doing like mainstream gospel now. So he's in that world. And then, who else is on there? China, like I said, Dana was doing background on there. Russell Elevato, engineered the whole album. I'm trying to think of, I mean, it's some more, legendary singers and musicians on there, but I think, oh yeah, Frank Lacy, I can't forget about him, trombone player, man, he played on there. They're not coming to me fast enough, but yeah, Jay Dilla, rest on the Jay Dilla. Listen, Jay Dilla's programming is like, to me, he's like, listen to Mama's Gun, like, that was the big takeaway, because at the time when Jay Dilla
was working with her, he started to make other records for, started being on the hip hop scene more in terms of the production, and that's where I got introduced with most of his music. It was mostly the underground records that I heard from him, from some Detroit rappers. But, yeah, Jay Dilla's programming on there, and then, his bass playing on Kiss Me on My Neck. It's like, you can't, it sounds like easy, but just speaking of a musician perspective, like his shit is so complicated. Because you have to really reprogram your head to, like, really understand how he's making that sound like real live instrumentation, and try to do that, replicate that on the drums is so hard. And it sounds easy, but it's not, because it's, like, the timing of it, they call it punch drum. That's what, I think that's what Questlove calls it. But it's, like, it fucks your mind up trying to play it like that. But, yeah, Jay Dilla is, like, legendary hip-hop producer, fantastic. But, yeah, Mr. Doc. A legendary jazz percussionist, part of Tony Bennett's Bout Casey orchestra. He's just fantastic. But yeah, I'm rambling too much. But Will, you said you had something you wanted to add to the conversation.
Yeah, I do. I have a question for the panel. Okay, and I wanted to ask the question right after. I just share some things with you guys. Q-Lynn, you probably know EB and Whitney. That we did a special on Monday Night Madness with Erykah Badu. We did her, and we also did one. I'm trying to remember if it was Erykah Badu. Q Lynn, help me out. Was it Erykah Badu and D'Angelo? And I knew we, it was like a couple of weeks of that, you know, and of us being associated with the Neo Soul, but now. Going back to the 90s and the 2000s, these cats.
So much. Go ahead.
Well, you know, yeah, I understand that. Hold on. Let me get, I'm going to get to something here. Hold on. Whatever,
I'm just saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, whatever genre you want to put them in, I don't care. But I love the music. The point that I'm getting to, like, you take that, her first album, like, Baduism, right? Which was released in 94. Then you had the songs like, On and On, Apple Tree, Nick's Lifetime, The Other Side of the Game. That album certified triple platinum, you know? And so I thought that was pretty cool by the RIAA, right? And then she had another one that was went double platinum. The question to you guys, do you think that Erykah Badu is underrated?
No. Absolutely not.
Now, I'm not talking about among us. I mean, has she...
Like,
go on, please.
Go ahead.
No, I just want to know... I think that I don't think that she's really have gotten the fame that she deserves, and that's my opinion about it.
I mean, I don't think she's underrated. The one selling her vagina incense that can sell out every 5 minutes. I don't think the way that makes vagina incense that sells out is underrated.
I think she's bigger than that. I mean, seriously.
She's way bigger than that. I mean, we're judging it based upon, like, what's going on now. Everybody's just in their own vibe. Like, she's a music veteran. So, of course, like, you only really get a reign in mainstream. This is for my take. Y'all can chime in if y'all disagree. 5 years, I feel like, is the max. Because I feel like with her debut album, the sophomore album, and her third album, those were really, she really had a strong three-album run, and most singers don't even get a sophomore album. Like, either it gets pushed back or shelved. Like, Carl Thomas is a perfect example of that, like, have an explosive debut album, and then that sophomore album, it didn't come out. Like, you gotta keep that fire lit, and so he let that flame go down, and John Legend was like, hey, man, I'm right here, man.
Okay.
John Legend came in and took that spot. So,
you haven't
so
said that.
A sophomore album, nobody was looking for it. So.
Okay, haven't
but
said
I didn't
that.
Care, go ahead.
No, I haven't said that. Has that translated into her bank account? I don't know. I haven't looked up her net worth or anything like that.
Look, I don't care about none of that.
Well,
it
yeah,
for sure it has. Like, all albums.
I think her coins are straight.
I wouldn't call her underrated at all because in the grand scheme of things, honestly, she is one of the most visible R&B stars of the past 20 to 30 years because she's the one that these mainstream artists have worked with, not just the R&B artists, but she's worked with, you know, these different artists and groups and different genres. And this is the thing about the term neo-soul where it gets tricky, because it's marketing, and that actually, that marketing helped her to become as visible as she is now. I mean, just in terms of, you know, if you put her up next to, at the time, her debut was 97. So 97, you got Faith, you got Mary, you got Kelly Price, you got, I don't know, you got Brandy and Monica still, everybody's still making music. The smart decision was to market her that way, because that allowed her to take up this lane that no one else was currently filling. But to say she's, I mean, her money's straight. Okay. Underrated, I won't say she's underrated. I will say that sometimes it feels like she's underappreciated for what she's given us and her gifts, but underrated, I can't say that.
Okay.
I would agree.
I can respect that. I'm sorry.
No,
I was just saying, I would agree. I don't think she's underrated. I just think, like a lot of artists, you know, even somebody like as high profile as Mary, I don't think that people always appreciate the depth of their artistry and what they really represent to the culture. And sometimes that just takes a book or a good documentary or a good article or something to pull that all together for people to get.
Exactly.
Okay, well, guess what? What's the difference between being underrated and underappreciated? What's the difference?
For me, underrated. I think underrated just means that people don't, like, people don't notice you. People don't buy your albums. People don't, you know, they're not interested. Underappreciated means, in my opinion, like, listening to something like Mama's Gun, just hearing, you know, the skill level of the musicians that she has involved, or knowing her writing and how on every album, you know, she has this vision. I don't think people really appreciate how much work she actually puts into crafting, you know, these great albums. People don't appreciate her as an artist. They, you know, they see Erykah Badu and it's like, oh, you know, On and On, you know, Bag Lady, Loving My Life, you know, they like that stuff. But they don't really appreciate, like, yo, did you hear the way she used the sample? Or, hey, she was a really big Atlantic Star fan. Did you hear how she did that remake? Or, you know, oh my God, she went overseas and worked with this artist, or she went and worked with Zap Mama. Like, you know, people don't appreciate, you know, the work that she puts into making sure that we have a great experience as listeners.
Interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Wow. Q.
The only thing I would say on that, I don't really, like I said, I get neo-soul is like a marketing term, but I hate the way it's used now. It's more of like, oh yeah, that old style neo-soul. That's how people describe it now. It's not like meant for trying to describe like how certain journalists do when they talk about Erykah Badu, D'Angelo, Maxwell, who else they add in there, Bilal, or whoever they associate with neo-soul. They never say it in like a, like, oh, it's just that kind of style. They want them to stay in that lane. And it's like, for me, Erykah's albums have been transitioning. Like, the first album, the vibe is completely different from the second album. This is the third album. And then the rest of her albums, none of them sound alike, and none of them have, just like with, I'm just saying from, I guess, the marketing standpoint, but when you talk about sonically, then none of it sounds the same. Maxwell records don't sound like Erykah's. Erykah's don't sound like D'Angelo.
At all.
It might be
like
the same people that are added to there, but they all have different influences.
They have different
meanings behind how they're representing the music. Like with D'Angelo's, like, he did Cool in the Gang's Sea of Tranquility. He did a whole replica of it and just turned it and made it his own. But like I said, you could call that neo-soul, Cool in the Gang neo-soul, because that's where he's pulling from.
Right.
Or you could call Herbie Hancock's records neo-soul.
Yeah.
Like, none of that shit is new. Like, especially
well,
like somebody that...
Even at the time, somebody like Erykah or somebody like D'Angelo, they were not doing, you know, a whole lot different than the other R&B artists of the time. It was just the way they marketed. Like, they're all coming in with these hip-hop influences and these soul samples. They were all using them, but certain people just got labeled one way because of, I guess it really came down to image for me. Like, when I look, I'm like, okay, you know, you're gonna make this person neo-soul because they're not Ghetto Fabulous, which was, like, everything that everybody was in 97 was, like, that's what we want. It's like, okay, well, you got, you know, the sister with this, she's got the onk on, and she got her head wrapped, and okay, all right, And it's like, oh, and then listen to her lyrics. Oh, okay, you know, she's not simply telling us, you know, whatever. Like, her lyrics are, they're kind of complex. Like, she's telling a story in a